from St. Anthony Parish, Alston, Massachusetts.
There was an interesting article that came out in the news about a month ago, and it was the release of some academic papers within the circles of the American Society of Oriental Research that explained how Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. Now, a couple of things. I studied biblical archaeology at Harvard Divinity School. Didn't get a degree in it. I just took a course in it. There in the study is a place called Tel El Hammam, which many believe is actually where Sodom was located. There's something important here. Many people hate to hear about Sodom and Gomorrah because they believe that the sinfulness mentioned there leads others to condemn those who engage in the same sinful practices, mostly different forms of sexual immorality, which obviously they don't consider sinful. So they get upset when anyone discusses Sodom and Gomorrah. In fact, some of what I read also indicated the same idea in trying to discredit the Sodom and Gomorrah story so that people will not consider such actions sinful. They basically said, see, it was a natural event, so stop talking about the sinfulness. But scientifically, there is a study that says that a major cataclysmic event happened in Tel El Hammam that matches a similar cataclysmic event stated in the Bible. What biblical archaeologists found is that a meteorite exploded above the area. The altitude and the nature of the explosion caused total destruction, the likes of which cannot be fully imagined except for in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Evidence indicates that within seconds, we're talking about over 4,000 degrees. It's fascinating because, and this is my military background talking, the event they describe is the worst case scenario possible for the amount of destruction. The meteorite they cited exploded at an altitude that caused the most amount of damage. It's the same principle used in military warfare. So now I'm going to tell you what people teach about Sodom and Gomorrah, and it's partially wrong. What they teach, not what I teach. I'm going by literally what the Bible teaches. According to the Bible, why were the two cities destroyed? Many will name one sin or another, and the common cause is usually something to do with sexuality. People were practicing this sin, therefore God punished them, is the way the teaching goes. It's partially correct, partially incorrect. If you actually read the Genesis account, you will see that the cities were destroyed actually not strictly because of the sinfulness of the people, but actually because of the lack of righteous people. It was not the nature of the sin that led God to destroy the cities. It was the lack of righteous people in those cities. The number cited specifically is 10. And you can read that account in Genesis 18. If you read it further, you can understand that what you actually had was a total social breakdown that turned the cities into places where people were lost in their own passionate anarchy. And remember, there were no righteous people there, none. So there was no one standing up and pointing to a sign of goodness. Imagine Lord of the Flies. That's Sodom and Gomorrah. But remember, it is right in the book of Genesis that the real reason why the cities were destroyed is that there were no righteous people there, none. There's an important lesson here. Our faith tells us that humans have a natural inclination because of the fall to choose a form of selfishness that is self-destructive. We call that sin. The first temptation is that you will be like gods, which leads us to live in such a way as to believe that we are smart enough to run our own world our own way. We're not. Once we understand our weakness and look to the Lord as the source of our peace and wisdom, then we find the truth that sets us free. We saw an example of this week with a breakdown on social media again. In this country, in which people tweeted and spoke death threats against a group of teen boys who got caught in the storm. Even the local bishop and metropolitan archbishop got caught up in the storm and apologized for the students' actions without hearing the whole story. That's what Sodom and Gomorrah looks like. I want my world my way. I want people to die who offend me, who stand for things I don't believe in, etc. Remember, according to the Bible, those cities were destroyed for lack of righteous people. By your baptism, you have a calling to be those righteous people. In the second reading today, we see Paul writing to the people of Corinth, which was a city not much different than what we see today. It was a port city, which today we also call a sailor's town, and had all the activities common in such places. You had the Christians who were trying to live the Christian life despite the surrounding atmosphere. Paul is teaching them that each one has an active role in living as the body of Christ, as signs and symbols of the presence of God in the world. He says the same to us. Each of us have gifts that we bring to our faith that enable us to live as the light to the world and salt of the earth we are called to be. We join those gifts with others in the community to become the prophetic community we have a calling to be. How do we do this? Pope St. John Paul II wrote that we must be people of prayer, not just in Our Father every morning, but of course that's okay, but we're also invited to what is known as contemplative prayer. Interestingly enough, he wrote this in a letter to the church in America, which means he literally wrote this to us. In this sense, contemplation, he writes, is not a privilege reserved to the few. On the contrary, in parishes and communities and movements, there is a need to foster a spirituality clearly oriented to contemplation of the fundamental truths of the faith, the mysteries of the Trinity, the incarnation of the Word, the redemption of humanity, and the other great saving works of God. I'm reminded of Thomas Merton's book, New Seeds of Contemplation, which, by the way, is still available. Through this contemplative prayer, we discover our gifts and how we are to live in the world as the people Christ called us to be at our baptism. You and I have a calling to be God's people. We become the righteous people by fostering in our lives an intense prayer life with God that transforms us into being His witnesses every day in a powerful way. If the events of the last week are an indication, that role Jesus invites us all to is even more important now than it was 20 years ago. And so in our prayer, we learn what our gifts are, we learn to use them, and we learn to share them. TV news will say, and has been saying, and continues to say, your role is to pay, pray, and obey. Nothing could be further from the truth, as our reading from St. Paul clearly indicates.